Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have Rom Dave Dow Borglum. Rom Dave Dow is the author of How to Live So You Can Die Without Fear and the executive director of the Living Dying Project, a pioneering figure in the conscious dying movement. He has spent decades helping individuals face death and life with greater awareness and has collaborated with leaders in the field, including Ram Dass, Stephen Levine, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Drawing on his background as a mathematician, meditation teacher, lover of God, and devoted practitioner of both Eastern and Western healing traditions, Borglum offers a uniquely practical and accessible map to the healing path. You can contact him on www.livingdying.com. Oh, Rom Dave Dow, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being on the Great Awakening show today.
My pleasure to be here.
Yes, absolutely brilliant. And wow, you know, I've just got to say, your book, How to Live So You Can Die Without Fear, and the work that you do on with your living, dying organization, just amazing. Absolutely just amazing. It's as a yogini, I find, you know, the whole of this process very, very important, you know. And first of all, Rom Dave, please tell us, you know, tell us about your book, How to Live So You Can Die Without Fear, and how did it come to be?
Well, it's a whole long story, of course. I was trained to be a mathematician. And when I was going to graduate school, just as karma would have it, whenever Ram Dass would come to Northern California, he'd stay right across the street from me. So we got to be friends, and I ended up following him to India and ended up with his guru, my guru, Maharaji, came back to America. And he was very interested in conscious dying. He had been friends with Aldous Huxley, who wrote a book called Island, in which there was a utopian community that had a center for conscious dying. So eventually, he and I were joined by a fellow named Stephen Levine, who wrote a number of books about dying. And the three of us, back in the very late 1970s, beginning of the 1980s, began talking about conscious dying. And what I mean by that is this was the first time where people in the West, at least, had tried to integrate the wisdom of the contemplative traditions into end-of-life issues like working with dying, grieving, caregiving, etc. There were books about conscious golfing and conscious childbirth and this and that, but there was very little conversation about dying at all at that point. So it seemed like that was a very important issue to bring to the public's attention, which we did. And eventually, I ended up opening and facilitating a place called the Dying Center in New Mexico, in the United States, which was the first center for people to actually come and live with us and die consciously. And we had about 86, 87 people there over the course of 3.5 years. Then I moved back to California and I changed the name to the Living Dying Project. We have volunteers and clients all around the world. We have free of charge, one-to-one support for people that would like to be supported in approaching death, grief, or caregiving. And we also have free of charge groups. So I wrote a book about that. And part of the book is my story. Part of it is my interpretation of the spiritual path. And I think I have a few things to say about that that I haven't really seen emphasized other places. My impression, having been a meditation teacher for 50 years now, believe it or not, is that there are certain things that people import from the East that don't really work too well in the West. That has to, we have to appreciate the psychological conditions of people here in the West. So there's my story, there's this overview of the spiritual path, and then the third part of the book is applying that to the encounter with dying, the encounter with grieving, and how it can be applied to caregiving.
Wow. I mean, it's such a, the most taboo subject, as you said. You know, back then, people just didn't want to talk about it. You know, right. No one wants to talk about it, but it's something that's inevitable. We're all going to die. And I truly believe, as a yogini, our whole life is gearing and preparing us for that moment of death. That moment that we pass over is so important for the soul's evolution. And, you know, I think if you're scared to die, you can't truly live.
Exactly.
You know, it's that, it, you know, that's what in your, that's in the title of your book, isn't it? You know?
Exactly. The way we live kind of determines how we die. And in a way, the dark, dirty secret here, Yogini Joanne, is that if I teach a workshop about meditation, and then a few weeks later, I teach a workshop about conscious dying, they're almost the same workshop. There are a few attitudes or techniques to be used right at the end of life. But almost all of it is bringing a meditative sensibility, a sense of compassion, a sense of embodied mindfulness, a tantric understanding that it's all sacred to the encounter with death. And we learn to do that by doing that right now. Here we are, you and I are talking. Can we remember that you're going to die and I'm going to die and we don't know when? Not as something that's morbid, oh my God, but does that encourage us then to see this moment as precious? That you and I will probably never see each other after this hour, right? You're in Britain, I'm in California. This is our opportunity, this moment. And my moment with the listeners, the viewers, this is the moment in which we can do this thing. And then the next moment and the next moment. Now, I could be saying, which is true, I'm having some major computer problems. And I've got to, when I'm done with Joanne, I've got to go and fix those things and thinking about that. But that just detracts from the ability to die into love, to die into this next moment.
Beautiful. That's so true. And that's what Ram does, you know, be here now. Be here now. It's being, you know, in the now moment, isn't it? In the present moment. And that's why it's so sacred. And people have to learn not to be so scared to die, because you're going on to the most miraculous, celestial, melodious, you know, transition and higher evolutionary state of existence that we can't even fathom. It's the great, isn't it? It's the great escape. You know, it's the great unknown, but it's just the best journey that we could ever take, you know, into that sacredness, into that peace, into that divine light and that divine love. That's what I believe.
Well, I don't know if I've ever met anybody as excited about that journey as you. So congratulations.
Not yet, though. Not yet. I've got a lot of living to do, you know. But yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know.
Hopefully.
No. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, of course. Of course. Wow. And I mean, it's just beautiful. And after decades of working with people who were dying, tell us, what have they taught you about how to live? That is such a beautiful thing.
Well, I get different messages from different people, of course, but it's hard to come up with something that isn't a little bit trite. I think some of the most important things I've learned are that it isn't about me coming in there and thinking I've got to be helpful and fix you and do something. It's more about, can I be with you as you're dying, or can I even be here just this moment? And begin to appreciate that in this moment is this blessing, is this sense of grace, that each moment is blessed, each moment is grace, and that it's a lot more, or it's at least as much about receiving as it is about doing something. And that in the West, we get so fixated on, I've got to do this, I've got to die well. I've had so many people who at the end of life said something like, I've done so much meditation practice, I've done so many chanting workshops, I'm really into devotion, really into meditation, and here I am approaching death and I'm really afraid. I failed as being a spiritual person, because they have some feeling that if in fact you've done enough spiritual practice, you ought to be feeling that even this is fun. My first meditation teacher, Suzuki Roshi, said, enlightenment has been the biggest disappointment of my life. And I think what he's saying there is that no matter how evolved you are, how close to God you are, you still have a body, you still have a personality that's going to luckily, hopefully, get older and die. And you have a personality that still might not be happy all the time. But can we, in spite of all that, be fully accepting? Can we use these spiritual practices not so much to fix things, but to fix our relationship with things, so that we can meet life with a compassionate heart? In Buddhism, they have this remarkable notion that compassion is a mixture of sadness and joy. You're sad because there's suffering in the world, there's suffering in you. You're joyful because your heart is open, but it's a joyfulness that transcends happiness and sadness. So what they're kind of saying there, I think, is this very important point that we're twofold beings. You're a woman, I'm a man, you're in Britain, I'm in California. In that level, there is suffering, we have bodies, we're going to die. Is there another level where I can look at you, we can be together, and there's something that doesn't die, that there's a sense of sacredness or wholeness? So that when I'm working with a dying person, there's two jobs to do. I can do one or the other very easily. The trick is doing both at the same time. One job is to be with the humanity, the human story that's lying in that bed. Somebody is dying. They might be frightened. The relatives might be very upset. There's this human story to deal with, to comfort people, to support people. On the other hand, it's easy to get lost over there. Oh, my God. On the other hand, there is this dimension of consciousness, this wholeness, that living and dying are two sides of the same coin, and that we can be resting in the context of wholeness, of oneness. Can we do both at the same time? Can we not get so lost in the spiritual that we're not there in this human way with this human being? Can we not get so lost in the human story that we're not resting in the boundless context, if you will?
Yeah. As the you know, we are all human and we're all spiritual energy, aren't we? The soul consciousness. So, and of course, you know, this body is material, it's physical, it will die and go back into, you know, into the earth, but our soul goes on to the heavenly realms, to the different higher levels, wherever we go when we pass over our soul. And I think that, and that for me is the existence consciousness continuing, and as a meditation teacher and someone who's been a yogi and studied for many years, I think that's very important for people, because some people they think that there's just blackness, there's just nothing beyond this realm, but and I think that's it gives you that, well, for me, that the soul, it continues, and there is no such thing as death, really. It's just another different metaphysical or another multidimensional realm that we go into, the heavenly realms. And I think that's so important for people to know and to really embody, to really, feel it. Please tell us about how you feel of that, this life after death.
Well, I have kind of two things to say. One is, I don't care too much.
Okay, right.
And by that, I mean what I want to do with my life and be able to share with other people is something very practical. How can we live now
Yes.
to be more alive, more awake, more passionate, more loving? And that what happens later will take care of itself.
Yeah.
Now, I certainly have had the blessing to be with some of the greatest meditation masters of the late 20th century. I've been with the Dalai Lama when nobody knew him. I was in the room with the Dalai Lama with two of my friends and a translator. The 16th Karmapa, Anandamayi, Maharaji, Kala Rinpoche, all these incredible beings. And they all said things that seemed to indicate that something survived death. I've taken a lot of psychedelics. I've been around a lot of dying people. I've gone very deeply into meditation. And in each of these explorations, it seems very clearly to me that there is something that survives death. I don't think it's quite as simplistic as this cartoon notion that there's a soul that goes popping from hopping from life to life to life. The Buddha said that trying to understand karma and reincarnation are two of the things that can unhinge the mind, that can make you crazy, right? That it's a lot more complex than that. And here's another Buddhist story. And I'm really not a Buddhist, but I like to talk Buddhist. Because when I use words like Jesus and love, I have no idea what you're hearing, because we each have our own childhood woundings or relationships with those words. But some man came to the Buddha and said, "Does reincarnation exist?" And he said, "Well, if it does exist, how would you live your life?" And the man thought about it for a minute. He said, "Well, because I would want a really good next birth, I would meditate a lot and I would study the scriptures and I'd be kind of an all-around nice guy. But if it didn't exist, because this would be my only chance, I'd really meditate a lot and study the scriptures a lot and be an all-around nice guy." And the Buddha said, "Just so, it doesn't make any difference." So to me, the question is not what's going to happen when I'm going to die, but what's happening right now.
Yeah.
How alive am I willing to be? How deeply connected with Yogi Joanne am I willing to be? Yogini, there you are, right? With this big red rose behind you, like this magnificent background. And it's easy to get involved in philosophy about all this stuff, but in a way, we're dying each moment. And each of us has a lot of childhood conditioning that it maybe is uncomfortable, but it's more comfortable than being free, because that means being a different person. That's ego death.
Yes.
So that really, whether we're talking about physical death or ego death, it's the same preparation.
Yes.
Can you be grounded? Can you be centered? I mean, my my experience has been as a, I used to be a yoga teacher, meditation teacher, now guide to the dying, that a lot of Western people aren't very embodied. They're not very grounded and centered. That all this Eastern wisdom was written by and for Asian people a long time ago who were walking around barefoot and didn't have an iPhone. Right? So they had a whole different set of problems. And many people come to me and they say, help me deepen my meditation. Help me open my heart. Help me die consciously, whatever the situation might be. And they're coming in holding a big bag of fear, guilt, and shame over their shoulder. Until we start to deal with some of that stuff, then it's going to be very difficult to die consciously or really open your heart. Yeah. So that my training of a math as a mathematician in some way was very difficult to escape. I call myself a recovering mathematician in that I was so lost in my mind for a while. But it's enabled me to see patterns and stages of early childhood development, the awakening of the chakras, 12-step recovery programs, the three anas of Buddhism are all fundamentally saying the same thing. So that just as an example, a little child is about to be born. From midway through gestation to 1 year old, she is learning to be grounded, to trust that it's okay to be here now, to be physical. And to the extent that she, in utero or the first year of life, had illness, injury, accident, abandonment, neglect, feeding difficulty, whatever kind of thing, she began to learn that the world isn't completely safe. My earliest memory, I was feeling incredibly joyful. I found a hairpin on the floor and I put it in the electrical outlet in the wall. I thought, look how clever I am. Those two things go in those two holes. Boom. I got the shock of my life. What did I learn? I learned that following my curiosity could almost get me dead, right? A lesson that I've carried with me, right? So that the demon of the first chakra is fear. And as this little girl continues to grow, the ages of 6 months to about 2 years old, second chakra, not just being present, but moving into the world, movement. And the demon there is guilt. No, you shouldn't make so much noise. No, you shouldn't draw on the wall. You've got to draw on the coloring book. No, you shouldn't piss on the floor. You got to piss over there, right? Third chakra is about shame, about who you are, not what you're doing, right? So that we have these wounds, fear, guilt, shame, and the wound of the heart is grief. Grief dares us to love again. So going back and working with fear, like for instance, in English, we say, I am afraid. In Spanish, yo tengo miedo, I have fear. In Tibetan, fear is here, right? So just in the way we think about emotions in the West, in English at least, it's harder not to get lost in those emotions.
Yes.
Fear is only a passing mind-body state. It's like a cloud in the vast sky of the mind. Mm. Are you the cloud or are you the sky? You're the sky.
Yeah.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are the consciousness, aren't the observer. You know, we're not our thoughts and our feelings. And it was really beautiful what you said, because, you know, when people come to you and they're dying and they want to die consciously, they want to have that experience of a conscious death. You said, you know, they come with fear, guilt, shame, all of that. That's like a whole lifetime of accumulation of that, you know, and you have to, you know, is, you know, what do? You help them work through that and let it go and surrender. And, you know, as Ramdas says, be here now and just accept that, you know, for them to be able to move into that place of peace and acceptance. And, you know, it's going to be okay to let go. You know, let go of the physical. Just tell us.
Well, in the beginning of doing this work, I was living with Ram Dass. Stephen Levine was over on the other side of town. And I thought, you know, I've got all this training. I've got all this knowledge. My job is to come in and really help people and say, here's the way to do it. Here's the way to die consciously. But as time went on, I really began to see that sometimes people needed to suffer more. That for me to try to pull them out of suffering was really just slowing down the process and getting in the way. And that really the best thing I could do was to come into the room with somebody who was dying, which is the situation we're talking about here. And when I say dying, sometimes people get better. I mean, you think that's a dying person. The doctor says you've got 2 weeks to live, and then now the person's in Hawaii 8 years later or something.
Yeah.
But that the best thing I can do is, can I be in that room and can I be as awake as I can be? Can I be a living model that even this difficult situation is workable? It's open to embodied mindfulness. Mm. I can be grounded and centered, supporting an open, spacious heart.
Yeah.
And to the extent I can do that, maybe the person can begin to participate in that level of openness. Maybe they can't. Maybe it's just planting a seed. Mm. So the moment when they're actually dying, they kind of somewhere deep inside remember, yeah, there's this other way of being with even this. Mm. And Ram Dass had this wonderful, horrible quote where he said, suffering is grace. Now, if in fact you just want to have an easy life all the time, that doesn't make any sense at all. But if you want to wake up, if you want to be free, then where you are suffering is pointing very precisely at where you need to pay more attention, where you need to open your heart. Cancer does not cause suffering. Dying does not cause suffering. Resistance to cancer, resistance to dying causes suffering. And until we see how suffering is actually being created, clearly see, it's hard to work with it. If I think that cancer causes suffering, we're blaming the cancer for how we're feeling, rather than saying, no, it's my relationship with these sensations, with these thoughts that's causing the suffering.
Yes. So, yes, taking the responsibility of that, you know, yes, that's fascinating. That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. And holding space for that person, isn't it? So you're coming in, no judgment, you know, you're just there to hold that place and whatever, you know, for them to to be, for their true self to come out, their self to come out, and for them to instigate and help themselves. It's so fascinating. You must see
exactly
so many different ways where people come in, because it's all different. It's all an individual, completely individual experience of the dying process, is it not?
Yeah, it is. I've been doing a lot of podcasts to publicize the book. And so many people say, what do you tell the people who are dying? And it's completely individual. I mean, it's like sometimes when people are new to this work, they would like to have a script. Here's what I should say when somebody is feeling such and such. And to me, it's just learning to trust God, trust my true self, whatever you want to call that, Christ, Buddha, true self, Atman, trust that. And I find that being around death, being around people who are approaching death, awakens me. It really essentializes my life. Okay, I want to wake up. When you are dying, you might be in an automobile sitting next to your best friend in the world who's screaming in terror.
Yeah.
When you are dying, you might be lying on the floor of some grocery store and a stranger's breathing in your mouth to try to resuscitate you. So it's not necessarily you're going to be in a bed with everybody you love gathered around singing sweet songs to you. We don't know that. Each moment is preparation for that. And once again, not in some morbid way, but in a inspiring awakening way, that we're dying into the next moment again and again and again.
Mm. Beautiful. I love that. And I love what you said about the ego death as well. It's like we're here to enlighten, awaken ourselves, you know, and it is dying to the ego death, isn't it? You know,
yes.
But I think you know, it's like the dark night of the soul that keeps going and going and go. It's never ending. You think that you're awake, but then you have to go through another layer and you know, another dark night eventually. I think the whole world is going through a collective dark night at this time. I think it's a great time of awakening, fastening up. I mean, we're always awakening, but it's like a fastening, and individually the dark night. But I think the dark night is so essential, because it makes us look at that darkness within, to face the shadow, to embrace it. Because we are dark and we are light. We are both. And then the coming together is the wholeness, to become holy, them different sides to us, isn't it? To bring back
yes.
all them pieces that we gave away, to bring them back into wholeness and balance. I think that is enlightenment.
I would agree.
Tell us about the dark night of the soul.
Well, at one point, Ram Dass said to me, Dale, Ram Dev, he probably called me, you're having the longest dark night of the soul of anybody I have ever met. And I was only half done.
Oh, okay. My gosh. Wow.
I am very stubborn. So the dark night of the soul, for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, is a term from St. John of the Cross, a Spanish Christian mystic. And it's essentially that time in spiritual life where you're diving into spiritual practice, your prayer practice, your meditation practice, whatever it might be. And the world doesn't have that meaning anymore that it used to. You're turning toward God. The world isn't really there in the way that it used to satisfy, but God hasn't shown up yet. So there's nothing. There's no world. There's no God. You're just there in the dark. Right?
That's it.
And as you pointed out there, Yogini, Joanne, that it can come back again. About 6 months ago, I had this period of time where I was just walking around, not all day, but I was feeling a lot of bliss. I would say this mantra. I would meditate. And it was so juicy. I felt so much love. I figured I finally got it. I finally know how to do this. This is it. And then it all fell away. <It's> like, yeah. But what I'm really getting is that even the falling away is just as much that as the juicy part.
Exactly. And, yeah.
As long as I'm trying to grab at the juicy part and saying that's the good stuff, this is the bad stuff.
Yeah.
That's 180 degrees from the truth. One Chinese sage said, "What you are looking for is who is looking."
Yeah. And it's all good. It's all good. Even the bad is good. It's all relative. You know, it's all relative. It's all good because you've got to bless that bad thing and make peace with it, you know, and integrate it because that's, you know, that's how we learn. It's the suffering, as you just said, Ram Dass says, the suffering.
So I think that should be the title of your book. Even the bad, even the bad is good.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Yeah. But the suffering, if we didn't go through it, if we didn't go through the dark night, we wouldn't move. We wouldn't evolve. We wouldn't take that next conscious step. We'd stay in our place. We wouldn't evolve, you know, and it shifts us. It moves us. It forces us. It forces us to a precipice, you know, to awaken. It forces us to change. It forces us to grow, to see within, to, you know, thyself.
Right.
You know, yeah. But sometimes it can be quite, you know, when you lose everything, the dark night of the soul, you lose everything, you lose, you know, your friends, your, you know, the relationships, things like that, because you've outgrown that, haven't you?
Exactly.
Just begin again. And so the deeper fear of death, is that beneath many of our anxieties? Because that's what I was saying in the beginning when I said about, you know, if we're really scared to die, how can we embrace to living? You know?
Right. As a recovering mathematician, I have an equation. All fear is essentially equal to fear of death.
Yes.
And fear of death is exactly equal to the place you are not enlightened. Because fear of death is the place that you or I are lost in the illusion of separateness. So that, just as an example, the New York Times did a survey a number of years ago. What are you most afraid of? Number one was speaking in public. Number three was dying. The part of me or you that would be afraid of speaking in public is the place where I feel I'm separate from those people out there. I might get embarrassed if I don't do this well enough. And that's the place that's going to be afraid of dying, that I think I'm separate. I'm not one with God. I'm not one with reality. If you're one with God, one with reality, one with true self, you're not going to be afraid of speaking in public. You're not going to be anxious, right?
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're not going to be, yeah, and there is no fear of death, you know, because you're in the oneness. You're feeling that, you know, unity, that state of being, where.
So in the book, I put together this healing paradigm, and in it I talk about something that I call the tantric three-step. In America, we have this dance called the country two-step. It's like a cowboy dance. So this is not the country two-step. It's the tantric three-step. And it's a way of working with any emotion, any experience, but particularly difficult emotions. So suppose you're afraid. Almost always when people experience a difficult emotion, let's take fear in this example. As soon as fear arises, one begins to look out and blame the trigger. I'm afraid because he did that. I'm afraid because this might happen. One is fixated on the trigger, and very rarely does one actually feel in your body what it is like to be afraid. One is not mindful of the fear. One gets lost in the object. Okay, so the first step then is, at least for a few moments, can you let go of, like right now, think of something you're afraid of. Think that Donald Trump might rule the world, something like that. Or I don't know what the parallel thing over there is in Britain, but the Russians are coming. I mean, who knows what it might be, something, right? And instead of blaming the Russians or Donald Trump or whatever it is you want to blame, what does it actually feel like in your body? Let go of the narrative. Let go of the story. Let go of conceptualizing it. What does it feel like in your body? Particularly, can you be grounded and centered? Can you drop down, inhabit the torso, and feel what it's like to be afraid? That's the first thing. And then the second thing is then, can you feel compassion for she who is afraid? How you're feeling suffering? Studies have shown, not too surprisingly, that increased mindfulness leads to increased well-being, better sleep, better relationships, better health, the obvious things. But that if you add compassion, it deepens and speeds up the movement into well-being. And then the third step of the tantric three-step is tantra. Can I not only let go of the concept and be with something and have this compassionate relationship with it, but then through this open-hearted relationship, this boundless heart meeting the experience, I begin to get in a very direct way that even this is sacred. Even this is a face of the Divine Mother, whatever language you want to use. It's not a mistake. It's not something I have to get through to get to the good stuff. It's all the good stuff, right? So embodied mindfulness, leading to open-hearted compassion, leading to this tantric realization that it's all sacred. And then there you are, right? And on top of that, if you and I believe that that something survives death, the Tibetans, for instance, say that when you die, there's a light as bright as 1,000 suns. And essentially, my understanding, my belief, my experience is that we die into wholeness, into non-duality. Eckhart Tolle, Ramana Maharshi, Ram Dass talks about that. I talk about that. So that the step after the tantric three-step is, in our lives right now, can we begin to, at times at least, have a taste of that oneness? And that is what is preparing us to die without fear. Right. But it's very difficult to go from just being lost in your mind to jumping into non-dual wholeness. There are these steps, these embodiment, compassion, tantra, that prepare us to surrender into ego death, into the oneness, into, I guess the thing that I would hope people get out of it is that death and grief are not the enemy, that without them, the heart would not deepen, the heart would not be nearly so available. So that what I would ask people to get out of the book, or hope they get out of the book, is that begin to appreciate that you are a twofold being who suffers and is deeply human and in a very profound and poignant way. And at the same time, you are perfect exactly the way you are. There's this wonderful short poem by Hafiz where he says something like, "In the eyes of your beloved, everything you ever do, think, or say is always, always beautiful." So we're perfect, and there's still some room for improvement. They're both true at the same time. Yeah. And the fact we're going to die only emphasizes that point.
Wow. Absolutely wonderful. Yes, and it truly does. And is your book available now?
It is. Where all books are sold. All good books are sold, I think, is the quote you're supposed to use. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and I don't know what kind of websites you have over there, over the pond there, but it's not hard to find. And I would like to say, though, we have a website. The Living Dying Project has a website, livingdying.org. There is a lot of free material. Lectures, guided meditations, one-to-one, free of charge support, free of charge group support. The most complete site on the internet about conscious dying. Check it out, livingdying.org.
Beautiful. Do you have centers around the world?
No, but we have volunteers all around the world.
So you can find out. Wow, that is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Honestly, it's just Ramdev Dao, it's such a beautiful sacred work that you are doing, because more people need to, you know, take away that fear of death so that they can truly live now.
Yes.
Now moment. And not be scared, and to consciously, you know, pass over is such an honor, you know, isn't it? It's an honor, you know, for what is there to come next. Is such an honor to honor that, it being conscious and aware of that in that passing. So thank you for all of your work and all the people that you have helped so much to consciously pass over. Thank you for being on the Awakening Show.
And thank you for what you do so much. It's been a pleasure.
Lovely. Absolutely.